Hey there, welcome to SaaS and Bound Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Dana, Head of Growth at SaaS Group, a serial acquirer buying wonderful SaaS businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business success. And today with me is Zoli, founder of SendStreak, Fishbowl, and the CTO of TimeButtler, a tracking tool beloved by hundreds of companies and the most recent acquisition of SaaS Group. Welcome to the show.
Exactly. Thank you, Anna. It's great to be here, as always.
Yeah, awesome. I wanted to add, and one of my favorite people from SaaS Group. So.
Oh, thank you. Thank so you. But you be careful, because others will see that too. So I don't know how that comes down.
It will hurt. Well, you know, what are you going to do? Let's start with your background, you know, because it is a big list of things that you do. How did you get to do all of it?
Yeah, so I'm an engineer. That's, I think, something that needs to be put out loudly first, because that influences literally everything that I do. I will probably tell more about that later. I've been working for larger companies in the past, to the point I think the largest one was T-Systems, like 4,000 or 5,000 people-ish back then. But I'm with SaaS Group for 4.5 years now, and I'm loving it.
Yeah, I know, because you've been all around. You joined with Prerender when you first came to SaaS Group, and then you moved to Scraper API, and this is your third GM role within SaaS Group. Well, tell me more about this entire transition journey and how you got to know about SaaS Group in the first place, because I joined 2 years ago. I had to dig real deep to see if that is even a real company. So what drawn you to this?
I was contacted by a headhunter called Jamie, incredible guy. And he was the one who the early sales group was working with to hire people. And then I had super nice, friendly interviews with three nice guys that later on turned out they are the so-called board. We are still hiring. As you know, we are now more than 360. I really hope that at this point, no one has to have an interview with the entire board. I think that would be just super overkill, right? I had no idea who these guys were. It's like three nice guys, nice. And that was the first time I met them. And then the pandemic hit. So we kind of tabled everything for about half a year. And then we rejoined in like June or something like that. And then I joined.
Okay. I had my interviews with two. So
nice.
It was interesting, interesting experience. So what was your first role? Because, you know, you're coming to work for a serial acquirer, right? We buy companies, and most of the time founders stay for some time. Teams stay as well. So, you know, if a founder goes, you're kind of feeling in those shoes and you're coming to a team that, you know, was probably loving the founder and you're a new guy. I think for a lot of people, that would be a bit of a stressful situation. How was it for you, and how was it also handled on our side?
I think it's stressful always. I agree with you. But I mean, I've been a manager since something like 2009 or something like that. And it was, I think, only one time when I was nominated to a manager from the team. So I've been through something like this already, like maybe 4, 5, 6 times that I actually joined the team as a manager. And yeah, I had to build that level of trust that then let me work the way I have to. It's not easy, but it's also, I don't think that's very hard. I mean, probably if you do it once, the next one is not that hard. So I joined first. I was contacted first for Prerender. And then one of the mistakes we did there that I still kind of tell as a story, that my test during the hiring phase was that I had to do the technical DD for Scraper, the API. And it was great. I loved it. At the end, we had a chat with the board. Now I know that was the board. And we said, like, yeah, I mean, these two brands are actually quite similar. So maybe one GM for the tool would make sense, right? And to be honest, we couldn't have been more wrong about that. I mean, other than the fact that both of them are using Node.js and both of them are using browsers to a certain level, nothing is common here. But still, it worked out well. I enjoyed it. And the results were coming. So we grew in nearly 4.5 years. We grew Preender to like 4x, Scraper API to 3.5x. I think these are numbers that are worth writing on a CV, I would say.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So any tips? Like, we're still hiring, right? I think we're hiring for Scraper API, right?
Because you Yes, moved. For my role, yes.
Yes, tough shoes to fill, but...
I don't know.
Yeah, any tips? Like, a person, again, is joining an established company. It's a suite of different brands, and you know, there is a central team. There are certain expectations because, like you said, the growth was pretty stellar. Who are you looking for?
That's a difficult question because that probably leads us back to the question why we are acquiring companies and what we do with them afterwards. I'm a firm believer of the theory that companies in different life cycles or stages need a different type of manager or GM or founder. I think SaaS Group is very good at acquiring companies at a stage, basically at the edge of the state where the founder may not be enough anymore to further scale the business. Maybe they got tired, maybe the brand needs something else now that the founder can't give or don't want to. And that's the point where you have to involve another type of GM, someone who can make an early phase startup stable, scalable, lean, and just basically prepare for growth, for long-term growth. And then I also think that there is a point in time, probably somewhere around, I would say, 8 to 10 million ARR, when the next cycle comes, when we need someone who is probably not that much of a product focus anymore, not that much of a builder type of person, but more focusing on business, more focusing on metrics, KPIs, marketing, PPC, how to build a sales pipeline, how to convert an inbound pipeline to an outbound pipeline, and so on. And Scraper API is at this phase right now. And that's also one of the reasons why we agreed with the board that I'm interested in something else where I can do what I'm good at. And that will also come in handy that a Scraper API will have a new GM who will focus more on these numbers. I often jokingly say that a Scraper API now needs a GM who doesn't get bored on RevOps meeting, because I do.
It's really cool though, like, listen to you, I just realized that there is like a certain empathy and also like understanding what people are and who they want to be when they grow up, right? So the interest that you have, and I think one of the things that we also really cherish is this entrepreneurial kind of mindset, and we'll get there because you're also a founder. Moving from Scraper that is now building processes and operations into Time Butler, also a new journey for you. Tell me a little bit about the product, because it's I know a little bit, and what I know is already fascinating, but you probably have more details. And yeah, what excites you the most about this new journey?
I think what excites me the most is that I can go back to the roots and do basically again what I did in the last 4 years. Build a team, make a product sustainable for the long term growth, and everything that I've already mentioned. The Time Butler team is very small right now. We are going to extend it basically, I think, like 3 or 4-fold. The founder, super nice guy. I love him. Super humble, very smart. He did an incredible job getting to this point. But I also think he's probably tired. He probably had enough. And I also think, which I think he agrees, that the brand now needs something else, needs someone who takes the brand to 20, 5 with a new look, with modern tech stack, if need be, with scalable operations. And that's what I think I enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, your first job with SaaS Group was basically tech due diligence, product due diligence for Scraper API. Exactly. And I think you still help with the assessment of the new tools that we think about acquiring. Obviously, the biggest thing in this process is to identify where we can optimize and where we can change and where we can still grow it, because we acquire amazing products like Time Butler. But the goal for us, I mean, this is still business, right? We want them to grow. We want to see how to take them to the next level. So how do you do that? Basically, like, what, as someone who runs due diligence, what are you looking at when you look at products that you're assessing?
I think what we mainly look for are optimization potential when it comes to costs. And I definitely don't mean like laying off. That's not, I think that has never even been the goal. But we did things like reducing the hosting costs from $130,000 a month for one brand to below $40,000. That's a significant saving, right? And it's not that the original founder wouldn't be able to do that. It's just having less resources, no time to do that, it blocked them. And we have enough people, we have enough knowledge, we have time to do these, looking through these, and then execute. If you think it through, it's like that cost reduction is basically like what? Basically like more than $1 million saving in a year, right? These come in handy.
Absolutely.
I wanted to mention, and it may not directly answer your question, but I just had a chat with our head of M&A yesterday, and we start to feel more and more that the best integration process for a new brand could be done, or could be, when the new GM, who will be the GM of the newly acquired brand, is already on board at the time of the DD, because then it's an extra ownership that he or she can show during the DD, and then he or she can get excited of the new brand when it finally gets acquired. I know it's not always doable, but I think it would be incredible if we could be able to.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. Like, you see right away the areas where you exactly want to change something or optimize. So let's get back to my question. I think there were two, and it was a bit too broad. So yes, like you said, we've been optimizing for cost, and, you know, I think it was pre-render, right, where we cut it almost like 80%, right, for server costs.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, which is exciting. I think, like, a lot of people, there's somewhere on the internet, on Medium, I think, a blog post about this, a very extensive one. So if you're curious, find it. But yeah, like I said, like, when you're assessing a product to work with, like, to get excited about too, right? Is it also about the tech stack, like something that we already have experience with? Or is it just how robust the architecture is, or how much, again, the resources and time you will have to allocate to fix something? So what's kind of a best case scenario for you if you're looking at a new product? And what do you think would be a no-no for us if we're looking at a new thing to acquire?
That's a difficult question to answer. There are many founders out there, primarily technical ones, who think that the infrastructure or their application or their code is the value that will be acquired. And I have to say, it's probably not. It's not. I'm not saying that it can be as bad it can be. No, that's not true. But we have seen beautifully growing sustainable brands and acquired them where the tech stack and the code base was really shouting for some help, I would say. And it was okay. I mean, we have the expertise, we have the skills to handle that. I think it's the business metrics that matter much more when it comes to making a decision on what to acquire, whatnot. Is this brand growing? Is this brand have have a kind of an inbuilt risk that we won't be able to handle, like a vendor lock-in or something like that? Are there still optimization areas we can look into with some extra skill set? Like, we acquired a brand that did not do any PPC. That's an obvious thing to do. I think these are the most important things that we look into. And then, of course, the team, the founder, how convincing the story is. There's obviously a big chunk of human factor in it. We have called deals off because the founder story was not convincing. Everything looked good, but that's not. And then, I mean, it's a risk. It's a risk that's hard to handle, right? These things.
Okay. Yeah. The more kind of talk to technical founders, technical people, the more it seems like, it's not that there is nothing that can throw an acquirer off in your tech stack or product, but it's the least likely thing to be the reason to call a deal off.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, it's true. And I know that for many technical focused founders, it's surprising, I'm sure.
I think so, yeah. So let's talk a little bit about product development, because we have a lot of exciting things going on in SaaS Group. And, you know, I just recently crawled out of my hole and started really looking into what different people are doing with AI at SaaS Group, because we give quite a lot of freedom to work on what excites people. And it's been fascinating, honestly. Like, some things, I was just mind blown. So what are you most excited now about all the developments, all the experiments that we do at SaaS Group?
I think there's a general buzz around AI, and not every aspect of AI. I mean, primarily LLM, so large language models. I think most of our brands are already looking into it. Some of them already have some kind of integration into their own tools. Even we have one. I think that's super exciting, and the possibilities are really endless. But to be also fair, I'm also one of the technical decision makers who is very cautious with that, because I've seen it happening that people try to like inject AI into every possible areas of their code base, and then it backfires. AI is a great tool, but as every tool, you have to have a challenge, an issue to solve, for which AI will be the answer. But it's not like, okay, I need to find where to inject AI into because I just have to have AI. I think that's a wrong direction.
Okay, then I have the next question. Can you give an example? Because again, this is probably something founders don't think about, right? They want the AI. Like, I saw what the guys are working on. I want that. Like, build it for me. Build it for my podcast. Like, I've thrown a few ideas at them. But like you said, some can backfire. And this is something to, again, to optimize for and something to think through. What are the examples that you've seen? And maybe, you know, you can give a general direction of like how to be cautious about implementing AI.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I have a general guideline here, but I can give you examples. Sure. One of the most kind of obvious ideas when it comes to web scraping is that, hey, you use ChatGPT to describe what you need, and then ChatGPT reaches out on the web and then converts it to some CSV or JSON, anything you need, and there you go. There's your data. Sounds great. But I want to see the person who does that 1 million times a minute. I'm yet to see that, right? We also have a ChatGPT integration, just to be clear, but we are not using it to convince people that this is great and they need to sign up to us because of that. We use that as a lead generation. This shows what scraping can do for them. And once they are ready to do the next step, to scrape on a larger scale, they should sign up, and then we'll help them, or AI will help them to really scale that. But this prompt-based scraping, which a lot of scraping companies tried, that won't work.
Okay, so it has to be a painkiller or not, just a nice to have kind of, hey, everyone has it and we will too.
Exactly. I think it's quite a bit like Web3, that now there was a time, like maybe a few years ago, when every investors were happy to throw money at anything that used Web3. This is now AI. We need to be more cautious and mindful here.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, another question that I wanted to ask you is your own things, right? I know that, like I said before, at SaaS Group, one of the things that you'll find on the website too, in our position descriptions, is we are looking for people who have this entrepreneurial spirit and mindset, because you're given a lot of freedom at your position. You kind of, you have a freedom to, in a way, determine what your role is going to be. So this is really crucial. But in your case, it also means that we, and in many other cases, I think, right, we have quite a few people who have their own projects apart from SaaS Group. It also means that we support people who want more and who build their own stuff and are serious about it. So first of all, tell me about what you're building. Like, what is Fishbowl and SendStreak?
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
So Fishbowl is an old thing. It's like, I would say, 8 years old, and it was one of my early projects. I co-founded it, so it wasn't my idea, just to be clear. I'm really not good at public speaking and recording videos about myself and so on. I know I should do it more, but I'm not good at that. And Fishbowl was exactly about that. So you can imagine how confused I was when I had to do like test recordings and stuff like that. So Fishbowl is a, in Australian terms, because it's an Australian startup, it's a flipped classroom tool which lets lecturers and students record videos for their home assignments or for their lectures or even for tests, and then share it with their teachers or their students. And it basically empowers home learning. We founded it 8 years ago. It's not a great success, to be very open with you. It generates some money, not too much. But the reason why I'm super proud of it is that after we ran out of seed money, we were still working on it for a while, but then we stopped because we all obviously had to have a job, and it's still running. I mean, for the last 6 years, I think as an engineer, I touched it like probably like 4 or 5 times, and it's running beautifully. I know I will get called for that, but bug free and generating money. That's the most sustainable thing that I've ever seen.
Okay.
The other project is SendStreak. Now that's mine, and that came from my idea and my frustration being a CTO for a few years. What I realized is that transactional emails get super complicated over time. As a startup grows and it starts to send not only 10,000, but 100,000, 1 million, 10, or maybe even 100 million emails a month, tools that are available on the market are getting exponentially expensive and hard to manage. So SendStreak tries to ease that pain by leveraging on a bring your own server approach. So you can basically use AWS or Postmark or any other of these email delivery agents, and SenseFreak only gives you this shell on top of them, things like email history, audience management, templates, webhooks, all these things. And this also lets you do something that, as far as I know, no other services do, which is that you can actually replace your underlying service in a minute if you have a delivery issue and you don't lose your data.
That's really cool. So how does it work? I mean, you do all this work for SaaS Group. You're moving to your next role. You're onboarding a bunch of people and you have two of your own businesses. How, like, well, I said this setup is supported at SaaS Group, but how in real life is it going?
I think it all depends on dedication, that I do know that I work for SaaS Group. That's my first job, and I would never do anything that would make me lose work there. The other thing probably comes back to what I told you about Fishbowl. I'm excited to build sustainable, robust things, and SenseFreak is one of them too. As I've mentioned, Fishbowl, I haven't had to touch it for like the last 4 or 5 years. SenseFreak is a bit like that too. It's running, customers are using it, and I every now and then take a look at the logs. I see that everything is fine and then just move on. I should probably work a bit more on that because I have a few more feature ideas. But yes, as you probably guessed it, I need to find time.
Absolutely. That's what I was looking for. Like, give me some crazy AI automation tips or something. But no.
No, I can't.
You're an old school dude. No AI for you.
And old as well.
Right. Okay, well, that's pretty cool. I mean, this is something that I continue to notice. I mean, people are supported and, you know, given an opportunity to grow even outside their workspace. So this is, I think, this has been quite a bit of good word about SaaS Group here on this podcast. Oh, well.
I agree.
But okay, let's get back to what you're doing now. And like we said, with Time Butler, there's quite a few areas where you could grow and you're hiring a few people. So that could be your moment to tell who you're looking for, who you're hiring. It can be your shameless plug.
Yes, thank you. Although I have to be honest, we actually filled the team in like record time.
Oh, wow.
Which is great. Okay. We hired, was that 3 people in like 1 month? And our next open role will be probably in like January or so, which is probably going to be an account manager. So yes, if you have anyone who is listening here for that role, I'm open. But other than that, we filled these roles very quickly. Actually, I think it was a record time.
Okay. Well, that says something, right? Everyone wants to work with Zoli.
Or they don't know me. I don't know.
But they don't know you yet. They don't know what they're getting into. All right. So just a couple more questions. With that new team, you know, obviously, we already discussed that, you know, when we buy, there are quite a few spaces where we want to find an opportunity for growth. Where is that first step with Time Butler? Like, what are you doing?
So Time Butler has a lot of low hanging fruits when it comes to marketing, when it comes to sales. Obviously, we talked about the team building. So what we are doing right now is focusing on a few marketing related optimizations and a little bit of product improvement too. So things like UI facelift, things like potentially a better onboarding, just to tweak those numbers that at the end add up to revenue. Things like sign up rates, things like sign up to pay and churn. These are the 3 main drivers that we are working on right now.
Yeah, and well, you already said that you hired 3 people and you're still hiring, but another thing that we always talk about and we think that it's a very unique and a big thing to advertise about, you know, how we do things is that we have a central team that obviously helps every brand that comes into the family. So being in three brands, going through all this different journeys, how do you feel like, how do brands actually benefit from joining us and having these resources from Central Team?
I think, honestly, it's an incredible advantage that very few private equities provide to their brands. It probably all comes down to resources and costs. A small company having one, two, three team members probably don't have the resources to have a full-time marketer, a full-time SEO person, sales, DevOps, and so on. And Sales Group can give that. What we do here, as an example, we work together with the central marketing team, which is a team of something like 17 right now, if I'm not mistaken, or something like that, big. This is something that as a small brand, as an individual small brand, we would never be able to have, right? We have in-house incredible SEO experts, content creators, technical SEO people who we only could have access being an individual brand if we sign up to an agency. But what I very often find is that agencies lack ownership, so the collaboration is not that seamless. You can contract individually all these people on a part-time basis, maybe on Fiverr, but then you have to manage them one by one, and that's just a burden. With Central Teams, we have that in-house. We have managers there who manage them, and it's just much easier, everything. And of course, it comes with full ownership. So they are us. It's not like they do their job and then leave. They will stay. They will be the one who, if the brand grows nicely and builds their own in-house teams, like hires their own marketer, their own DevOps people, they will be the one who hand over the knowledge to these new members. And I think this is just an incredible advantage that we have here.
Yeah, I love how you put it. You know, we are one, like there is a mutual goal that we share. So basically it's not like, hey, I work at the agency and I will work with, I don't know, give a bit more attention to a brand that maybe exactly. pays more or like, you know, occupies more of my hours. It's basically, yeah, every brand has the same priority. And yeah, that would give an advantage. Thank you.
Exactly.
All right. I have just a couple more questions for you. The usual ones, of course. Feel free to reflect, think a little bit about this. You know, again, over this journey, over these years with SaaS Group, you're with us from almost the beginning. So what has been the biggest win and the biggest failure?
Biggest wins. I think my biggest win was the team I built here for now. I think one of my strength is building a team in general, but this team, the Scraper API team, turned out to be just so incredible that I can't even find the words that could talk about them. Also, that's also one of the reasons why I'm half sad leaving them, right? We talked about the entrepreneurial mindset, and I think here we nailed it. We have people who, after some initial handholding, onboarding, and so on, they took their own path, and now they are the ones who come to me and say, hey, let's do this. And I think this is exactly what, not only what we are looking for here, but also what we really nailed with this team. I think many smart people told it before me that it would be just stupid to hire great people and tell them what to do. Just hire them and let them work. When it comes to failures, we had a few. I could talk about product-related decisions that we messed up. But I think one of the failures that at the end turned out to be something great came out from was the one that I already mentioned, that we really misjudged Preender and Scraper API's similarities. So I managed both of the teams for a while, basically for like 2 years. But then we managed to hire a great GM for Preender 2 years ago. And then that team also became like a very self-motivated and highly growing, not only in team team size, but revenue-wise too. That was a mistake that we still keep joking.
Yeah. All right. That's a good one. I mean, you turned it around, like you said. That's wonderful. So the last one is a hack, right? It can be something that works just for you, even a conventional wisdom that we want to be reminded of, or something that you and the team keep coming back for a bit of success.
Well, I know many product owners wouldn't agree with me here, but I'm a big fan of the approach fail fast. This make a decision on something as quick as you reasonably can and then execute. Because if you do that, you will still have time to roll back and fix it after you learned what you did wrong, compared to other people who probably take much, much more time analyzing the data, analyzing things, and then to make a decision that can still be bad. But the time they do that, I iterated 3 times. And probably my solution will be by then better than what they do first. I think that's just also when it comes to going to the market, that's probably the best advice I can give.
But I mean, let's be honest, product people like to disagree. So we just...
And it's okay.
And it's okay. We were just talking about, you know, like following the gurus and following frameworks. And yeah, we had it with a product manager here. And he said, well, you know how many frameworks there are for like product people? And there are groups that like religiously follow one of them or another. And I started thinking about the same for marketers. And yeah, I mean, there are groups for each department out there. So yeah, it's okay to disagree.
Yeah, I actually lost a friend on these religious strictness. I was like, no, I'm out.
Okay. see what product does to you.
Exactly.
It's scary out there. All right. Well, Zoli, it's been great talking to you as always. I have the best time. So thank you so much for telling the story. It's great that you have an opportunity to balance your projects and still have an incredible passion for everything you do for SaaS Group. So happy to do it again anytime.
Me
and
too.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me here.
Sure. Awesome. And take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.